risk of getting or transmitting the virus. And booster doses help reduce the number of hospitalizations and deaths related to COVID-19. For better protection against the virus, book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine and follow the recommended vaccination schedule. Vaccination against COVID-19, a good way of extending our protection. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
It's your boy Dash all the way from Grenada and tune in to C-Cut 90.3 FM.
Let's dress up like pirates.
Award-winning Canadian singer-songwriter Francois Clark. Brand new sophomore album Adventure Book, available now. Adventure Book is a stunningly crafted musical voyage filled with invigorating pop anthems and introspective ballads. Francois is an internationally renowned artist that has been featured in the Netflix hit film Feel the Beat, alongside artists including Demi Lovato and Alicia Cara. Listen wherever you stream music. More at FrancoisClarkwithak.com.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Melissa Pavonga, Ulume, August 17, 2021. Nipuvamo Tunga Sorte, Ulume Tusaksa Langarut, Ani Pisukte, Ohave Hatilo, Carlo D'Angelo Mit, Mantriamio, Policing Itano, Casimaru Leganame, Pinsuktinga, Hanupinaso Mangame, Tusaksa Halangaruk, Tamani Mantriami. Amalo pinsuptitak kami po William Gumaksiu Tiksak o kawe kalangaro kinan simi Gumaksiu Tiksak kinaw na mininap anak minita na sinikot inuntito tusak na niya lang ang milyokot nalat yung nakatsi. I'm Emily Sapa. Today is August 17, 2021. Welcome to Nipibot. Today, Annie Pisukti interviews SPVM Indigenous Liaison Officer Carlo D'Angelo about his work with the community. Also, our new co-producer, William Kumaksiutiksak, interviews Kinen Simic Kumaksiutiksak about finding identity through dance. We also play Inuktitut music, so keep listening. Don't Say a Word by Young Black Inuk.
Don't say a word. word. You got a knock, you know, Seba. Look at my own mother. So don't say a word. You got a knock. In a dream, I'm the girl's song in the mouth. Don't say a word. You got a knock. In the street, now, nigga, I see you in the car. So don't say a word. You got a knock. In my car, Hano, it's a Maria Runga. Damely, hope but hope for Dama. The banal of Inus do love me up to what Lunga look in Kabara, in the Lunga, I read Nalunga, and I can keep up behind Namanga. The Hana to do Lord in Lanane, and I love it now, and the Sunni, Inus, Sunni, the man, in me, you know, in me, who keep that to me, the man, I run a tree, and there was a thing I can say in the manna, and of two, it's a Mahatama, a fair amount of to my two or so with the Nibunga, Simone Harel. Don't say a word, you just knock, you know, sir. Look at my rummy mother. Don't say a word, you just knock. In a dream, the girl's down in the mouth. Don't say a word, you just knock. In a dream, now, nigga, I see you in the car. Don't say a word, you just knock. In my heart, Hano, it's my yoga. Damely, Ubanga, Ubanga, Dama. Summer over, Umiro, rap, Pudinga. And then one in the dream, the Maruma.
Ni people mu nada to say a person on a mega mahalo natitu datsuming inu nikamasumi police uluni. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Annie. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can you just I know your name, but can you just introduce yourself, please, who you are and what your role is?
Yes. Well, hi, this is Carl DeAngelis. I'm the Aboriginal liaison officer for the Montreal Police Force.
And you have been a liaison officer for 5 years now?
Yes, I became the liaison officer in 2015 in the month of June. There was a collaboration signed by the Montreal Police Force and the Aboriginal community in Montreal, the réseau. And there was four objectives. The first one was to have an Aboriginal liaison officer. That's the role I took up. The second one was to have sensitivity sessions with the different police station, with the police officers in collaboration with the Aboriginal community. The third is we have a committee, an Aboriginal committee, which about 21, 22 members of the community sit on. And it's an advisory committee for the police force. And then after, the fourth objective was to work on projects. One example is the Esquay project for the procedure for the missing Indigenous women
in Montreal. What have been the biggest challenges you have been facing in your everyday work?
Well, the challenges is especially, let's say, we take with the COVID, it's been the isolation, you know, the lot of the services that members of the community were used to changed. The capacity has been reduced, and new centers have been open in its place. So it's working with everyone and make sure that the members of the Indigenous community that need help get it. And also, you know, from the beginning to today, I mean, we see the progress that's been done. There's still a lot of work to do, but I give you an example. In 2014, we started the joint patrols where we had the police officers, two police officers and two intervention workers from the community, and go on the street level and make approaches with the members of the community to bring them help, to make sure that they knew resources were available, to make sure that they have their identity cards, they know they're looking for housing, etc. And this was in 2014. It was twice a week, maybe 2 or 3 hours. And after 18 months with the Bretigneux of the Friendship Center, we realized that 20% more of the community was going towards the resource for help. And today, in 2021, well, you know, we saw the progress of these joint patrols because they are now permanent. The Native of Montreal went to get funding, and now we have 8 police stations that participate the Monday to Thursday. And you know, who would have thought 2014, 2021, that now it's normal to see 2 police officers, 2 intervention workers work together, collaborate, and to make sure that the members of the community that are homeless have the resources they need. But not only that, to make sure that if members of the community come from north, example, from medical care, that they know the urban setting, they do a prevention approach, pedestrian prevention. Also, you know, if somebody's making a report and then the joint patrols are available, they will displace themselves, reassure the member of the community that's taking the report, that they feel comfortable. So, you know, it's building ties. So when you look at, you know, the progress we've made, and there's still a lot to make, and we realize that, you know, with the role the police, the uniform has played in the past, there's a lot of bridges to rebuild, but I believe we're on the right track, and it's positive.
Mm-hmm. So the Inuit are receiving you without being afraid of you?
I have absolutely no problem linking with the Inuit community. I feel that they've adopted me. If I look at the beginning when I started working in 2013, 2014 with the community, and today, and even First Nation, at the beginning I had, you know, was the organizations that will call me directly, and now I have members of the community that will just call me directly, and, you know, references, they need some advice, etc. So you know, it takes time to build that trust. Mm-hmm. You know, and the key is to listen, to understand, and then, you know, together find solutions. And that's been my approach, and it's the approach of the police forces. You know, how can we do things together to make it better?
Mm-hmm. When you said that you're checking to see if they have IDs, is it you guys that are ordering them, or is it your partners that do?
No, that's the intervention workers. Like in the when we go on the joint patrols, they, you know, they'll make sure that, you know, they have proper clothing for the appropriate season. They want to make sure that, example, they know what resources are available. Sometimes though, members of the community think they're on a blacklist, so they can't go to this center or that center. They will check, and they'll realize, no, you know, you're welcome to go there. So they, and you know, are they looking for housing, and have they lost their ID? You know, sometimes you lose your ID, your Medicare card, etc. So well, then the center will, you know, will make the appropriate accompaniment for them to get their ID. So it's really the intervention workers that do that approach, and we were in support.
What are the primary services you offer to the community, and what is the best way to access them?
What we offer the community is prevention. We make sure, like with the intervention, what services are available. We have if there's a missing person, there's the Escue project that's in place. So I give you an example there. A member of the community goes to a police station to report a missing person, a family member. The police officers will take the report. They will try to have a place that's discreet so they can take it. If the person doesn't speak English or French, we'll ask for an interpreter. And if the person is accompanied, we'll let the person be accompanied so they're reassured, they feel more comfortable. Once the report is done, the police officer will give them a pamphlet, the Escue Project, and will explain to them what the coordinator is there for. It's Jessica Conjuano, and also this Janice now explained that the coordinator could accompany them through the process of the investigation, where they would meet the police officers, the investigators. They could also offer them services outside the police services. And if the person, the family member says yes, they will send me an email, which I send the coordinates of the person that's making the report to Jessica, and she will get in touch with that person and help her through the investigation, and we'll all collaborate on together. So that's one service we give when it comes to a missing Indigenous woman. Also, we offer, like I said, resources that are available at the police officers. They're taking sensitivity sessions, Indigenous resources in Montreal, make sure they refer them to the appropriate ones. And we collaborate on these joint patrols where, it's more elaborate and more services are offered.
Who does the sensitivity?
Sensitivity sessions. Yeah, there's two types we do. We do sessions of an hour, which we've done in the Poste de Quartier police stations. Mm-hmm. I think last time we did, we had done the interview together maybe 5-6 years ago. We were maybe 40-50. Today we've done 160. We've met about 3,500 police officers. Some have had it twice. And one part is 1 hour sessions where we meet the different police stations at the beginning when they start their shift. And by the way, Tina, your daughter was one of the first ones that started with me doing these sessions. And we do an historical overview of the Indigenous community, the intergenerational traumas, residential schools. After that, we do the situation in Montreal and how to better intervene. These have been ongoing until today. The COVID has stopped a bit these sessions because of the sanitary measures. And also we have, since the end of 2018, 4-hour sessions, which are more elaborate, 4 hours, 4 hours and a half, where we have the historical part is done by Pierre Picard. And he spends 3 hours he goes from 1800 to today, talks about also the residential school, CISI schools, the past relationship, how it works in the community, the differences between First Nation and the Inuit community. And then we have an hour and a half that is really the situation in Montreal, why members of the community come in urban centers, resources that are available here, how to better intervene. And that's also an opportunity to exchange with the police officers and the intervention workers, so it's positive. And this year, if it's possible, and right now everything is looking good, in the fall we're going to have 24 sessions from the 21st of September to the 11th of November.
Okay.
Of 4.5 hours.
Yeah. Aside from Montreal, are there other jurisdictions implementing similar programs that you know of?
I know that Sûreté de Québec has sensitivity sessions they do with their police officers that I'm aware of, because they've used Pierre Picard in the past, and they have a similar patrol in Val-d'Or. I know they have also a similar patrol. For the rest of the police forces, I can't tell you. I could tell you that we also have a collaboration with the Nunavik Police Service in Nunavik. We also went down to make a presentation to the Katsavik regional government. So we collaborate when something happens. Someone from the north comes south. We collaborate if we have to. We have a missing person or a situation, we could call our police partners in Nunavik, and could meet the family. We get the information faster and also give a more personalized service and reassure the family if there's an investigation. So that in 2019, the month of May, we came to Kujurapik, and we did a presentation, and also the type of resources that are in Montreal to show the community that when they do come here, that there is a community and that the Montreal Police Force is there for them, and not to be shy if they need anything from us or just come and say hi. We're approachable, and we want to get to know everyone.
Mm-hmm. When you say just come and say hi, this is when you're doing street patrol that they can come and say hi, or even at your workplace?
Anytime, you know, I'm available, but I'm not just talking about me. I'm just talking about all the police officers. You know,
okay. If
any members of the community are in Montreal and you see a police officer in uniform, it'd be a pleasure to exchange and to talk and any question, any prevention questions, come and see us, you know. And you know, one important part too, if you're in Montreal and there's something that's urgent, you know, dial 911, you know, do not be scared to do it. We will come and we will make sure everything's okay. We're there to serve. So it's so important to pass that message, is that the police force here is there for you. And we also, if there's need to make a link with the community up north, well, we've established ties, and we established ties with the Nunavik police and with the community. We spent in February of 2020. We spent with my inspector. We went down 5 days. We were in Kujawak and Pirunditsuk. So we had an opportunity to meet the members of the community, meet the different organization. It's beautiful. It was one of the best experiences I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really amazing when you go up north. I love going up north.
And the sunset, yes. And you know, on the top, it was just breathtaking.
Yes. Is there other initiatives you would like to see implemented?
Well, we're always open to better our service. So, I mean, what we want to do is we do not want to implement, we want to collaborate and implement something together. Because if we do it with the community and we have the full collaboration, we know it's going to work. We know it's going to function. We see it with the missing person procedure. We see it with the with the sensitivity session. It's a collaboration. I never do them alone. I'm always a member of the community. So we're always looking to do new projects, and it's something that we come up together with. You know, we're not going to show up and say, oh, we want to do this. If we have a situation, how can we better it? How can we improve the service? So we're always open to collaborate on different projects.
Mm. In your opinion, what are the greatest successes you have seen out of this initiative?
Well, what has been successful, I believe, is the first of the role of the Indigenous liaison officer. I mean, it's important. It's an important role. I will be taking my pension on the 2nd of December, and there will be a replacement. And that's so important because it is important to have somebody that has that link with the community full time. The joint patrols. I mean, you know, we started these joint patrols at the beginning, and you know, everyone say, well, you know, how's it going to work? Two members of the community with police officers, with the history of the past. And yet we found a way to work together and to learn from each other. And now they're full time and they're positive because the objective is to help members of the community. So that's another one, the Indigenous, the Aboriginal community. We have everyone around the table. It's not perfect. Sometimes not everyone agrees on everything, but it's an opportunity that to exchange. And we saw it during the COVID in the spring. We were almost meeting every second week, you know, an hour, finding out what was happening on the ground level. So that was, you know, I mean, you saw the evolution of the committee, the Escoy project with the missing Indigenous women too. I mean, you know, everyone works together, and it's great to see when somebody goes missing. Everybody's working, exchanging, and it's positive. So I mean, there's been things that have been done that are positive. The relationship, I believe, has improved. I know there's a lot of work to do, but I mean, we're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the person that will be replacing you, obviously, he has done the sensitivity classes and knows the Inuit community or the First Nations community?
Yes, and also there's going to be a transition. He's arriving on the 23rd of August, and I will be with him for 3 weeks and about a week. So I'm going to be making sure that he meets all the Indigenous organizations. He also is going to participate. He's going to participate in the sensitivity sessions. So he will be well aware of the different the differences. He's a First Nation, so he's a Rwandan, so he's First Nation. But he will be with me, and we will be going on the ground level, meeting with the community, and he will make sure we visit with you, so you could also transmit your the community message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hoping that after this pandemic that everything goes back to normal and we'll be having community feasts again, Inuit feasts. So it would be so nice for your new replacement to meet the community when we have that again. So I will make sure I let you know when we have our first feast.
Hopefully. Yes, and like I said, he's going to be, we're going to be together for the almost 3.5 months. So the objective is that he gets to know everyone and that the members of the community call on him when they need him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that will be wonderful. I have no more questions for you, Carlo. Is there anything else you want to add?
Well, listen, I you know, if any members of the community come to Montreal, You know, come and see me, they could call you, Annie, and we could, you know, meet with the community, go for a coffee. It's been an absolute pleasure working with the Indigenous community, with First Nation and the Inuit community. And I'm looking forward to the next months being able to see everyone. I mean, hopefully the sanitary measures are starting to be loosened, so to be, we're able to see each other more, and hopefully we could meet up and exchange and look at projects forward.
Yes, hopefully we can do that very soon. I know that the church that we have the feast at is opening back slowly, but it's in September, so hopefully by September or October we'll have our first Inuit feast. Thank you very much, Carlo, for being my guest today. And thank you for the great job you are doing with the community. We sure needed what you're doing. And that way, our people can start trusting you guys and communicate better, which I see it has been working very well. So thank you so much, Carlo. Thank you for the great job that you have done.
Thank you, and thank you, and I wish everyone a nice day, and when they come to Montreal, a safe stay, and we're there for the members of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Una artistic inge rosileri simayanga no nakjua. Yeah.
Hi, this is Angela Amahualik, and you are listening to Nipigo on CKUT 90.3 FM.
By Angela Amahualik. Beatrice Dear Ingisim Miyanga, 1997.
Thank you. Asuyuti Uvanga William Kumaxutiksak, also known as Northern Knowledge, Kange Clinic Mutak Siyao Yunga. Greetings, everybody. My name is William Kumaxutiksak, also known as Northern Knowledge, and originally I'm from Rankin Inlet, and that's in Nunavut. I am a co-producer with the Nipivut radio station, and I'm new to my position. I'm looking forward to highlighting inspiring Inuit youth and other inspiring Inuit who are doing amazing work in our communities. My first guest goes by the name Keenan Simic Kumaxutiksak, and he is an aspiring contemporary dancer and circus artist. Welcome to the show, Keenan. How are you doing today?
Hey, bro. I'm doing good. I just got back home from dance rehearsal, so I'm a little bit tired, but overall, I'm doing good.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to this interview today. And this is my first interview, like I was saying. So I guess just to get started there, Keenan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I also am originally from Rankin Inlet, Nunavut. For anybody listening, William and I are actually brothers and we grew up together. And so we grew up in Ottawa and I started dancing very, very early, around age of 6. And then I found my love for the circus arts when I was about 16 years old. And it's basically been my whole life, dance and circus, stretching, everything I do is just all based around dance.
That's awesome, Keenan. Can you tell us what motivated you to become a contemporary dancer and circus artist?
Yeah, so at 6, I started dancing because our mom, she put me in dance class because she wanted to have coffee dates with her friend and the class was free for boys. So that's how I got into it. And since my first class, like, I knew that's like all I ever wanted to do. And it's always been like my goal just to become a dancer. And like dancing means the whole world to me.
Yeah. And like through your work, you've traveled all around the world numerous times. Can you share your experience with us? I'd love to hear about your highlights, your struggles, and also your coping strategies that help you to be able to succeed on that journey.
Yeah, so in the beginning, because I was only able to take one class a week, I was not as good as all of my peers growing up who were doing like competitive dance, who were training 20 hours a week and everything, whereas I was doing 1 hour a week. So I felt like I was really behind with my dance training, and that was very unmotivating. And I felt like it didn't feel like a career was in reach for me in those times. But when I was 15, 16, I started working and just like a retail job and started making my own money. And I was able to put myself in more classes, and then I started showing myself a lot more growth and stayed dedicated and started training at home 4 hours every day. And eventually I entered into the summer solstice competition in Ottawa, and I actually won quite a lot of money from that. And I was able to fund myself doing competitive dance, which was my childhood dream. And from there, that's where my career really started. And I started meeting different choreographers and started working for different companies, and eventually got myself into a career. And I've been able to travel to 40 countries with dance, which I'm very, very grateful for. And so yeah, the beginning was definitely a struggle, just learning how to actually dance and how to make a career for myself. But now I have a very good routine and I have lots of great connections. And I've been living my best life the past little while being a professional dancer. And just to see where I've come from to where I am now, I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah, no, that's definitely, it's absolutely amazing. And like, just as your older brother, I've definitely seen you grow throughout your time. And like you were saying, like from your childhood up until where you're at now, and like, the amount of growth, not just in your dance career, but like in your life, is just absolutely amazing. And it's inspiring. And actually, on that note, like your career, it's more than just a job that you work. It's been quite the adventure too. As a contemporary dancer and circus artist, can you like share, like, where was your favorite place that you traveled to and why?
That's a difficult question, just because everywhere is so different and everywhere offers so many different things. But I do have a few places that mean a lot to me. So I was working on a cruise ship for a few years. So I woke up in a new city every day, which was very, very fun. A little overwhelming sometimes, but there's some countries that I really would love to go back to. One of them is New Zealand, all the way across the world. The people there were amazing and like the weather was good and I love nature. So I went on a lot of great hikes and everything there. That was very lovely to go to. And I also loved going to Norway. Norway was actually one of the first places outside of Canada that I went to. And again, I was traveling through the fjords of Norway, which are mountains. And I was able to go hiking every day. I did like 60 kilometer cycles and was just like out in nature, just enjoying the fresh air. And yeah, it was beautiful out there.
Oh, that's really cool, Keenan. Thanks a lot for sharing those two different places. So you said New Zealand and Norway, those were your two favorites of the many countries that you've been to?
Yeah, it's really hard to say that I have like a favorite country, just because like I said, everywhere is so different and everything else has something really amazing to offer. But the places with the amazing nature sceneries was definitely my favorite. Another place like that was Brazil. I went to Rio de Janeiro, and just being by the Christ up on the top of the mountain and seeing like the city view and everything was just absolutely breathtaking. So any place really with nature is like amazing.
That's really cool, Keenan. It's really good to know too. And like the reason why I guess I asked that question in the first place is like yourself as a contemporary dancer and a circus artist, you turn this into a career. And I thought it would be cool for other listeners, whoever's listening out there, to like hear how far that this dancing career can take you, or more than just dancing. I guess it's your passion that really led you to get to that point. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's for me, it's more than just a career. It's my whole livelihood. I like everything I do is for dance. I go on 10 kilometer hikes every day just to keep my body up in shape for dancing. And I stretch every day. And then I love to just play some music and just like start dancing on the spot and doing whatever. It really helps let out emotions that are built up inside of me. And I feel like dance has been one of the only things that's always been there for me. And I know it always will be there for me.
I'm really happy to hear that you have that positive outlook, Keenan. Good for you. And actually, I'm going to throw a curveball at you and I'm going to ask you a different question now. You've been very open about your identity these last few years, and it's been very inspiring for many in the LGBTQ2 community. Can you share your story as a young gay Inuk man?
Yeah. I mean, growing up, I would say maybe even the first 20 years of my life, it was very difficult, you know, being different and not being able to be myself fully wherever I was. The dance studio was really a great place for me to go to. It was a place for me to express my queerness. And I wasn't able to do that my whole life. So whenever I was dancing, it really, really helped me find who I am. And now that I know who I am and I'm fully Keenan all the time, it just feels so, so good because I wasn't able to be like that before.
Thanks a lot for sharing that. And knowing what you know about your identity today, what would you like to share with young people or with anyone who's still learning about themselves and their identity?
I would say if you feel something inside of you, that don't try to block it out. Just let it come out and be yourself, because it's going to come out eventually. So you might as well come out now. but yeah, if there's something, if there's a feeling, any sort of anything queer or anything inside of you, don't hold it in and just really, really express that out into the world, because in the end, you'll be so happy to be yourself.
It's really good to hear that from you, Keenan. You've got a really strong voice. And also to remind others, like, to come out on their own terms if they, you know, like, everybody has their own comfort zone. But, like, I really love what you said, just because, like, from your own perspective as a young gay Inuk male, like, I feel like it's really important for others to hear about that, because, like, you've got your masculine side, but you've also got your feminine side, and you really know yourself and you really connect with yourself, especially through dance. So thank you very much for sharing that, Keenan.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, did you have any other thoughts or messages that you wanted to share about that topic specifically?
Well, I relate my queerness and my dancing abilities together, and I want to tell the youth out there that if you love something and you do love it a lot, like for me, I love dance, and so I made my whole life about dance. Just keep doing that thing that you love, and just never stop working, because I love dance so much, but it wasn't always easy. I've had to break bends, blood, sweat, and tears into my body, hours and hours and hours of training, but I stay dedicated. And so I just want to tell the youth, stay dedicated to what you're doing. Keep doing it. Do it every single day. Base your whole life around it, and eventually great things will come for you.
That's a really strong message, Keenan. I really appreciate it. I just have a couple more questions for you.
Yes.
Do you currently have any projects on the go that our listeners should be looking out for? Is there anything going on in the community? Any updates that we should be looking out for?
Yes. So actually, I'm in rehearsals right now. I just moved to Montreal, and I'm doing this show called Sky Dancers, which is an Indigenous show. It's about a Mohawk story and about Kanawage, which is a reserve here just outside of Montreal, and the Quebec Bridge disaster with the my director. Her name's Barbara Daibo, and she's amazing to work with. And learning about other Indigenous cultures is just so cool to me. And being surrounded by other Indigenous artists and dancers as well has given me such a sense of community. So working in the show Sky Dancers, I'll be performing that here in Montreal, and eventually we'll be traveling together in my cast. And so that's something that's coming up for me.
That's really interesting. It's good to hear your past, your present, and then even aiming towards your future. You keep up the good work that you're doing there, Keenan. The last question that I have for you is where can we find you? Is there any way that our listeners can follow and support your journey?
Yes. So I primarily am using my Instagram as my source for people to find me, which is Comac_Comac, Comac_Comac. And it's an open Instagram, so anyone can follow. And I'm always posting dance content on there. And yeah. And I also like to advocate for Black and Indigenous issues primarily, and queer issues on my Instagram as well. So you'll see a lot of that on my stories and everything. And it's also my account where I post all of my dance videos.
That's awesome, Keenan. And so for anybody tuning into Nippy Voot radio station during this interview, definitely please go check out Keenan. He does absolutely amazing work. He's got a very strong voice, a very strong message to share with the world. That was a really good interview, Keenan. I'd like to say a really big Kliyan Namik.
Thank you so much, bro. And thank you for inviting me into this. It feels so good to be able to do this for the community. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing more parts to your journey there, Keenan. You have a good day.
You too. I'll see you later, bro.
Nakok me nipibu mo na lang kung nakatakot si Tana sibuli me nityarok Tusakata ta si Angela Amagolik Ingi ko si Lea Vininga Amaluta mani pinisuktirugot Uvanga Amalisa pa Ani pisuktik Jennifer May Nancy Angilik Tina Pisukti, William Kumaksiutiksak, Amalo Carl Power. Nakokmemi Jogot, Concordia University, Southern Quebec Inuit Association, Amalo CKUT 90.3 FM. Pinasuwa ko siyo laktome, naalalaki po si Urban Indigenous Radio. Tusaksaw tiloko, amalo utilak.
Union United Church, Cinema Politica, and Catbird Productions are proud to invite you to a special community screening of Dear Jackie, a feature documentary by Henri Pardo. This special event will take place in Little Burgundy's historic Union United Church on Thursday, September 1st at 7 p.m., and the screening will be followed by a discussion with the director and participants from the film. Dear Jackie poetically tells the story of one of the oldest black communities in Canada, Montreal's Little Burgundy, by way of a cinematic letter to Jackie Robinson, the first black man to break the color barrier in professional baseball. It also masterfully connects to the present by challenging the myth of a post-racial society. Make sure not to miss this special event. Admission is on a first-come, first-served basis, and a minimum donation of $5 for the church is highly recommended. This event is sponsored by Caisse des Jardins du Sud-Ouest de Montréal and the Sud-Ouest Borough of Montreal. For more information, visit cinemapolitica.org. We hope to see you there. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Montrealers were so proud it happened in their city.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3. FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally.